Hi everyone, this is Klaatu. You're listening to GNU World Order. This is episode 16. We're going to do some listener feedback because I've kind of been ignoring that lately. Not ignoring, but neglecting it. So let's get started. First feedback came from Doru. If you've heard this show before, you probably have heard Doru. He's been writing in for ages. It's been great. He says that the new format is a good thing. He likes it. And he votes to keep Og, but drop Speaks in favor of Opus, which, in fact, is exactly what I've planned on doing. That's the conclusion that I came to on my own as well. So, and that's, by and large, everyone who's commented in response to my thoughts about which codecs to preserve and which ones to switch to, that sort of thing, everyone's pretty much said the same thing, which is, yeah, keep Og Vorbis for just sort of legacy support and go forward with Opus in the spirit of progressing to the next big thing, I guess. But a couple of people have said that the Opus, the ubiquity of Opus is not exactly what I might think that it is. And that may be true. First of all, I live in a bubble of really just kind of being able to use free software for everything that I do. I don't really ever have to resort to anything that is not Linux-based, and generally speaking, something that's not open source. And that's just me right now. Like, that could change in the future, but for the past couple of years, it's just been kind of where I've been. It's been a good place. I like it, but it does tend to color my perception of how everyone else is consuming their audio and how they compute in general. So while I have the advantage of being able to just load whatever codec I want on my system because it's quite well supported, not everyone does. So Opus is a little bit of an edge case still, I think, even though it is. I mean, YouTube is backing quite well, I would say, quite solidly, the WebM format, which is the container, it's sort of a carved down Matroska container format for VP9 and Opus. So it's the YouTube format essentially, and certainly it's the format that Google uses internally to archive things. I know this because I was speaking to the guy who manages WebM at Google, or VP9 at least at Google. And he has said that, yeah, they're using it for really everything. You know, everything gets converted over to WebM eventually, and the place, the movie studio that I used to work at, I was part of the team to kind of move everyone over to WebM specifically for 3D stereoscopic 4K work. So it's pretty exciting stuff. People are liking it, and frankly, I'm liking it. The Opus encoding command is much better than the Speaks encoder command ever was. It's a lot easier to use. It's just really, really nice, and the quality of Opus is quite good compared to Speaks. So yeah, so lots of people are liking it, and that's good to hear. So Josh from the webhosting.coop entity that I was speaking about, he wrote and said that he thought the attach-up thing was kind of interesting, and said that he uses R snapshot, and in fact he has developed a kind of backup solution with R snapshot that was designed to be a, quote, simple, stupid backup solution. And I haven't looked at his version of it. It's github.com/JoshuaCox/mkrsnapshot. I haven't looked at that. It's sort of a backup thing within a Docker thing using GNU Parallel, which kind of, that does intrigue me, and SSH. It's supposed to be really easy to set up, and I do intend to take a look at it, but more importantly, maybe, or more pressing, is our snapshot itself, which I think I've looked at it before. I think I might have used it, and I've already started doing some tests between our sync, our snapshot, and our diff backup. And I hope in some future episode of GNU World Order to do a comparison episode, much like I did for the kdiff and compare and the diff tools. I think it would be quite interesting to compare backup tools. So I'm going to do that, and hopefully it'll be somewhat informative. I'm not really sure how informative it will be, since after all, I'm not it's not like I've got 3 years with each solution under my belt. I'm kind of looking at them within a month or 2 weeks or whatever it's going to be. So yeah, I'm not really sure how fair of a comparison it will be, but that's what I'm going to do. Josh wrote again in response to what I was saying about the Git desktop application, maybe I mentioned some other stuff, but he goes on a little bit of a rant, I guess, and that's what I get from the tone of the email anyway. And he says, "What do Git desktop, the Atom editor, Slack desktop, Git Kraken, Discord, and many more have in common?" And he answers his own question and says, "WebKit. They're all built on the same base that code that Google Chrome and Apple Safari are built on, which in particular is itself a fork of KDE's KHTML." Now, I knew that. I knew that KHTML was the basis for WebKit, and that from what I've always heard, Apple has kind of moved in, took a copy of the code, and then kind of went away and worked completely in private on it. And when sort of poked a couple of times for, "Hey, like, you guys are using this code, so maybe you ought to share it back because that's kind of the license," they, from what I've heard, they've kind of just they just kind of dumped a big, just like, "Okay, here's literally everything we've done." Not in diffs or anything like that. No history of how they got from one place to the other. It was just a big dump of code. So one of the cases of following the letters of the law, but certainly not the not in the same spirit. And from what I've always heard, KHTML kind of found that to be pretty useless. So yeah, I've always kind of had a weird feeling about WebKit. I mean, there's, I guess, a sense of pride, I guess you could call it, that it grew from KHTML, and then at the same time, sort of a little bit of disdain for how they handled it. And it has given a weird rise to these sort of embedded WebKit applications. And Josh further says that these are built on something called Electron. Electron.atom.io is where you can find that online. And someone else was complaining about this the other day on Mastodon, I think. And I ventured to ask for more information, and I got a little bit more information, and it was, I haven't researched this, in other words. It's just things that people are saying on the internet, and one of their problems are, well, there's this whole environment sort of embedded in this application, and yet there's no sandbox around the environment. It's kind of a messy, prone to memory leaks or maybe even security issues kind of situation, where you're embedding way too much in an application and then it just kind of letting it coexist with a bunch of other versions of that same thing on the system, and you just never know what'll happen. So that was kind of interesting to hear. Other people were kind of saying that it was just kind of a really ugly stack, which I can respect that as well. Although, again, I haven't researched this myself and I have no real opinion on it yet, but I guess I'm very much of two minds about this. So one would be, if Electron plus WebKit plus whatever means that we get cross-platform applications really, really easily, that's kind of appealing to me. Although, having said that, and having really thought about it, I realized that the only example of the list that that Josh provided, and this is just a random list that probably from the top of his head: Git Desktop, Atom Editor, Slack Desktop App, Git Kraken, Discord. The only example within that set of actual cross-platformedness is the Atom Editor. And even that, as I recall, was not released initially as a cross-platform application. It was released, if I recall correctly, for Mac only, and then it came to Windows, and then it came to Linux. And that kind of annoyed me in itself, just kind of because GitHub owes certainly a lot to Linux, and it, the Atom Editor is their sort of official editor, I guess. And of course they release initially for a closed source platform. I mean, it doesn't surprise me, I'm just saying it sort of annoyed me. So in other words, the five or six examples of Electron / WebKit applications, only one of them is actually cross-platform. So I'm not sure if there's a real advantage behind Electron and WebKit after all. Which, I mean, there may be, because that's sort of back-end technologies, so it might just be a question of what wrapper you put around it and how easily that wrapper loads onto a specific desktop environment. But yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting problem to have, this whole Electron WebKit problem, and maybe it's not a problem. And either way, I'm not even sure if that was Josh's point. I think Josh's actual point was all of these things are open source technologies, and yet people sort of cite them as really beautiful applications, but then at the same time say that open source has bad design. So it's kind of a funny split brain scenario going on. Or maybe that wasn't Josh's point, but that's what it made me think of anyway. So that was good. And then Donald wrote me. I don't think I've ever heard from Donald personally, but he says that he's been listening from a long, long time ago. And he says that he also feels that Vorbis would be a good thing to keep for cross-compatibility. He says he doesn't... He uses an application called Pocket Cast on Android, and he's not sure that that supports Opus. So, yeah, Ogg would be useful for him, he says. And so this is pretty much what everyone has said, so I feel like it's pretty much set. It's going to be a Vorbis and Opus podcast, probably after, you know, during the new year, 2018, sort of update the website so that rather than saying we're a Speaks Cast or, you know, a Vorbis and Speaks Cast, I'll change that to Vorbis and Opus Cast or Og and Opus, whatever. I keep saying Vorbis, but you know what I mean. I was told at one point that Vorbis is the correct sort of umbrella term, and people got really sort of annoyed at me for not using Vorbis and just saying Og or something like that. It wasn't really important, but now apparently it worked, because now I'm saying Vorbis a lot. Okay, so let's see, what else? Oh yeah, so Doug, my Python pal, wrote me and said that he enjoyed the latest episode, which I couldn't really tell you what that was, but it was the one about WXPython and PyQt, rather. And he says that he's never really used PyQt in the past, mainly because of all the dependencies that it has had. And he has used WXPython a long time ago, and he liked it, but possibly because it reminded him very much of the old Windows GUI development style using MFC, Microsoft Foundation Class, which I don't know what that is, but that was kind of like, that made sense to him because that's kind of where he was coming from. But he also thinks that the experience kind of blinded him to other GUI tools. Thinking objectively about doing WXPython work, it's not very intuitive at all and requires a lot of coding to get it right, much like Windows GUI work used to. I guess I was just used to that. I will have to look at PyQt a little closer and see what I think. He says, I like GUI work because I think interacting directly with users, though I think right now my focus is on web applications and building GUIs that way rather than standalone. I know web apps don't do everything, but the delivery or deployment of them is so much simpler. Everyone has a browser, and those browsers provide everything that's needed to run the code for the most part. And I mean, I think Doug hits on a hugely important thing there, is that, you know, the web browser, it delivers whether we like it or not, and I certainly do not really, well, I like this part about it. It delivers a consistent, kind of safe, common tool set for every platform. So if you want to write something and you want it to run on all of the systems, then sort of working within a browser is probably the easiest way to go about that. And as I say, I don't really love that. I think that in terms of putting a burden on the web browser as really your computing platform, I don't like that. I don't think that it promotes choice. I don't think it's very flexible. I've just got lots of issues with a browser always being open. And I will be honest, I do not. I'm one of those people who I very frequently do not have a browser open. That's just something that I don't. That's not like when I start a computer, the first thing I do is not open a web browser, and that puzzles a lot of people. They can't understand that about me. Like, I don't understand what you do on your computer without a browser open. The go-to application, like when I turn on my computer, the first two things that I most typically, if I had to sort of track it with myself, and I don't, but just kind of off the top of my head, I would say it would be console or a terminal of some sort, which lately has been console, and Emacs. And frankly, if I'm turning on my computer because I'm doing something very specific, it might just be Emacs, because I know that if I'm not going to be doing a whole lot in the terminal, then I'll just use the embedded, or not the embedded, but the extension terminal in Emacs to do little things like dir/ed and stuff like that. So yeah, those are the go-to applications, and a browser is not one of them. The browser gets open if there's something on a site that I need to reference and don't feel like I can reference it any other way than opening a browser. So I don't love everything being built for browsers, is my point. That said, I do like the how sensible it is that there is a thing on several platforms, on all the platforms, that people, that programmers can depend upon working a certain way. And I think it's, I don't think it's as much a benefit of a browser that exists as it is a shortcoming of every one of us that doesn't exist otherwise. You know, like, for me, it would be fantastic if PyQt, or if Qt itself just shipped with every computer, and that was something that you could always depend upon being on a computer, and you didn't have to think about that. And PyQt binding shipped on all computers, and that wouldn't be a thing. And you could ship WX widgets as well, and WX Python. It's fine. I don't care. I just think that it gets a lot more complex when you have Windows and Mac making their own toolkits that they know quite well will not work on other platforms. And when I say other platforms, I don't mean on Linux. I mean on other platforms, like Microsoft Widgets or whatever it is, I guess, Microsoft Foundation class. That's not going to work on a Mac. It's not going to work on Linux. And the Mac toolkit isn't going, Cocoa, whatever, isn't going to work on Windows or Linux. So you've got, like, these two major players being exclusive to themselves, even from each other. They don't even play nice with each other, much less with the littler guys like Linux or BSD. Or, hey, Open Indiana. I can say that now. I'm running that on my laptop. So it's annoying to me, and I think that's the shortcoming. I guess if the hack around that problem is, well, let's stuff everything into the web browser because that's the one thing that through the magic of internet people cannot resist, then I guess that's it's a hack. It does work. I don't love that that's the solution. Anyway, that's the listener feedback. That's all of it. That's everything I've gotten since the 9th of November up to the 25th of November. So I'm all caught up. How I'm going to manage all the feedback in the future, I don't know. I definitely think it's a problem to wait until, you know, one day out of a month to suddenly catch up on all the feedback, because then people who want to feedback about the feedback, you know, it creates less of a conversation. So I'm going to try to integrate feedback into each episode. And now that for the first like month or so, I've had episodes sort of recorded waiting to go, and I didn't think about the feedback. So what I'll do, if I record something in advance, then I'll just tack on the feedback at the end of that episode or whatever, and then I'll release it. So I think that's probably what I'll do. But now I'm caught up. So shoot me emails if you want. Hit me up on Mastodon or IRC. And thank you, as always, for listening. That's it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Klaatu. You can reach me via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. You can find me online at gnuworldorder.info or slackermedia.info. You can also usually catch me in IRC as not Klaatu. I'm on the Freenode network in the channels Ogcast Planet, Slacker Media, Slackware. Any of those will do. Thank you very much for listening. And I'll talk to you next time.
Is delicious. Do you know that?